I think most people at one time or another have been on the edge of a lake, maybe even out here at the beach, early morning. Sun hasn't risen quite yet, just kind of foggish type situation. The water is still, glass still. And you see boats out here. Beautiful scene, beautiful scene. Well, the final chapter of John's Gospel shows us a scene like that. And it gives us an incredible insight of a morning on the shores of Lake Galilee. As the sky above the Golan Heights previews the sunrise about to happen, a large body of water is dotted with fishing boats, different shapes, different sizes. A lot of the fishermen like to fish early in the morning, and they were trying to catch their last catches. Some of them fished during the night. From the shore can be seen the outline of a figure of men working on their nets, hoping for one final catch before heading home. Well, one of those boats holds a group of men who seem especially tired and weary. They'd been up a pretty good while fishing. Simon was one of them, along with James and John. Thomas was there, as was Nathaniel and two unnamed others. The fishing trip really had been Peter's idea. Verse 3 of John chapter 21, and I'm camping out in mostly that last chapter of John, also mentions they had worked their nets for hours and caught nothing. Bill alluded to this similar scene, but a long time before. I'm guessing, just a guess, they had worked in silence since so much had happened in the last few days, the week previous. What feelings they may have had in their minds, thinking things that had went over, reverting back to the Passover, in which each of them had pledged their loyalty to Jesus. Then at a critical moment of decision, what happened? Each of them turned and they ran. They denied him. Perhaps like us, they sought to escape the embarrassment. You know, when we do something and we kind of couldn't back up what we said, we get embarrassed. It's a personal failure. But sometimes by engaging in an exercise of doing something really hard mentally or physical diversion, I love to mow. Sounds crazy. Mowing to me is a thoughtless thing. It helps clear my mind. Another person may be fishing, like these fishermen. They all knew how to fish. Another person, they're going to go for a long walk. Everybody has their thing to try to clear the mind, so to speak. If nothing else, it would occupy their mind and time. And maybe if they caught something, they might make some money too. I'm also guessing that Peter was probably the most thoughtful of all, thinking about what all happened and what he said and maybe didn't do. Of the 12, his promises were the most absurd of all, when you think about it. You know that he was the one who stayed nearest to Jesus when he was taken in to the high priest, as he warmed himself in the courtyard of the high priest. But that is hardly the thought when you read what happened next. Remember, Jesus had told him, "Before the cock crows twice, you would deny me three times." Peter refused to believe it until it happened. Three times he denied any association with Jesus. Finally, he cursed and swore, "I do not know the man." At that moment, two things happened. The rooster crowed. And secondly, the Lord turned and looked at Peter. Don't you know that was a look that really probably burned through him? Luke 22:61. The Lord turned and looked at Peter, and Peter remembered the word of the Lord. How he had told him, "Before a rooster crows today, you will deny me three times." Peter didn't think he would do anything like that, but he did. It was a moment frozen in time. Probably burned into his memory forever. The cowardice of the others had been bad enough. But if they gave a prize to somebody that's really foolish, I think Simon Peter would probably be the biggest fool of all and also alone with that. That's when a voice from called to them from the beach in verse 5. "Do you have any fish?" Oh, the one word answer echoed back across the water. We don't know who answered back. "No." Probably a little bit disgusted because they fished and fished and fished and hadn't caught anything. The fog was around the stranger on the beach. It was probably about 100 yards away. A lot of us think, well, how could they hear that far away? Well, in the water, then it's still as glass. Voices just echo out there. Anybody that fishes knows that. I know Scott and Dan do. Roly. It's amazing how that is. He yelled, "Cast the net on the right-hand side of the boat, and you will find a catch." Oh, boy. Those on the boat, what do you think they thought? What difference is that going to make? We've been fishing on both sides already. What do we have to lose, though? You know, they probably shrugged their shoulders. So they did as the man yelled and told them. And the result was what? It was immediate. And it was also amazing. Their net was filled. Suddenly, what happened? They all looked. Who was that stranger? Who was the stranger on the shore that told us this? And it came true. John. He was the first to put the pieces of that puzzle together. Do you think he said, "It is the Lord"? Or do you think he said kind of quietly, "It's the Lord. It is the Lord, guys"? We don't know which way it was. But that was all. Well, that was all that John had to say. And it was all that Simon had to hear or needed to hear. He dropped the net. He probably thought, who cares about fish? He jumped overboard. He swam towards the shore in verses 7 and 8. Peter is swimming with all his might while the others are dragging with all theirs. Now, he had about 100 yards to swim, so he had time to think about what Jesus might say to him once he reached the shore. Would Jesus say to him, "I've come to say goodbye"? Or would he say, "Peter, I tried very hard to make you into a disciple, but you just don't have what it takes"? Or would he say, "Simon, let's sit down and talk about what you did the other night"? I know a bunch of parents have done that with your children, probably. But you know, none of that happened. By the time the exhausted group reached the shore, they found the Lord preparing breakfast. Now, there's not a lot said about what was said between Christ and Simon Peter when she got to the shore. I always thought that was interesting. They were hungry, tired, cold, confused. And having previously deserted the others, Peter now helps them drag the net to shore. In fact, one of them crunched some numbers and found the catch to be 153. A lot of people always talked about why that number was so specific. I think it's because showing that they're going to be catching a lot of souls in the future. That was a lot of fish for them to catch. That's when Jesus invited them to eat, in verse 12. Now let's imagine the scene. A resurrected Jesus cooking breakfast for a bunch of deserters. That's what they were. They were all deserters. They turned their back on him when he was arrested and tried. What do you call that? What do you call this whole scene here? I think you call it grace for Christ to be there. What followed was even more amazing. Simon heard none of the negative comments Jesus could have made or that he imagined he would make. Instead, he heard one question repeated three times. You've all heard these. So when they had finished breakfast, Jesus said, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" Only days before, Peter had boasted his loyalty in the presence of the others. Matthew 23:26-33. But Peter said to him, "Even though all may fall away because of you, I will never fall away." This time, there would be no such promises or comparisons. There would be no bragging. Instead, Peter spoke one simple truth. "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Keep in mind, the others are around too. They're around a campfire, cooking fish, eating breakfast. They've gotten through. So they're hearing all this going on between Jesus and Simon Peter. Jesus was not through. In the second question, Jesus drops the more than these comparison and asks a more direct and personal question. "Do you love me?" Peter responded, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Now, the first two times Jesus asked, he used the word agape, the highest form of love. In other words, "Simon, do you agape me? Do you love me enough to sacrifice everything?" Humbled by his experience of failure, Peter would not compare himself to others, nor would he overstate his case. His response was a simple, "Yes, Lord, I phileo you." Now, Peter used the common word for brotherly affection and friendship. But Jesus still isn't through. The third time, Jesus assumed Peter's own word, "Simon, son of John, do you love or phileo me?" Now, the first question challenged the superiority of Peter's love. "Do you love me more than these?" The second question challenged Peter's personal love. "Do you love me?" The third question challenged Peter's own claim to affectionate love. "Do you love me?" "Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you." Peter's response was filled with humility and humbleness. Three times the Lord had asked him if he loved him. Yes, Jesus did know. Then Peter heard these words he never thought he would hear again. Tend my lambs. Verses 15, 16, 17. Or in other words, I want you to feed my sheep and take care of my people. Now he's talking to Simon Peter, but the others are hearing this too. And they're getting it also. Jesus' original call to Peter included the challenge. Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. That call remained in place. In spite of his denials, his failures, Peter was still on the team. He was still a player. Quietly and in subtle ways, Peter was being restored. His broken world was being rebuilt. Now, I think every reader of the Bible has certain scenes and stories that are their favorites. This one is down to earth. It is emotional. It is hopeful. And it connects. The scene is a model of what it means to take the gift of grace and press it into a broken life. It is interesting that the last chapter of John's Gospel concludes with the story of restoration and grace. Turn the page, and the first chapter of Acts does what? It embarks upon the story of the same grace message to be shared with the whole world. Acts 1 and 8. But you will receive power when the Holy Spirit has come upon you, and you shall be my witnesses both in Jerusalem and in all Judea and Samaria, and even to the remotest parts of the earth. And who would be the first grace messenger inviting men to turn from their sinful past and be baptized in the name of Jesus Christ? Yes, it was Simon Peter. That's amazing. That's grace. The early morning breakfast with Jesus drives home three things. Jesus came into Peter's world. The rebuilder went to the broken. Why? Because the guilty are often too wounded to take the initiative themselves. They have already concluded the worst. God can never use me or love me again. I'm damaged goods. I'm forever broken. That's what Peter thought until Jesus showed up on the beach. I'm going to talk about someone here, and I may cry. When I was studying, reading this, and going over things, I thought about Buzzy DeOlive. I've known Buzz for a long time. Some of you others have known him for a long time. We talked to Buzz about the gospel. And Buzz is the best philosopher there is out there. He could talk a good game, but Buzz didn't want to listen. Went to him several times in their home talking with him. Times they've been in our home talking with Buzz over the years. I'm talking about what, Buzz? 40 years? Long time. Then Buzz, he's been going through having a lot of heart issues. And he had one of his heart attacks. And he kind of got over it, and I asked Darlene, be okay, come talk to Buzz. And she says, oh, yeah, sure. You know Darlene, she's agreeable with everything. So, Tim, you remember this? So I called Tim up. I said, Tim, We need to go talk to Buzz. I need to go talk to him. And I picked Tim up. We went over to Buzz's. Before he got out, I told Tim, I said, Tim, I'm going to take the lead on this. And I'm going to be kind of hard and harsh. So we went in and we talked to Buzz. And I was a little rough that time, wasn't I, Buzz? Kind of got down to brass tacks. I thought it was time to have a come to Jesus meeting. I didn't know how many more times the Lord was going to allow him to have a heart attack and before he obeyed him. So we talked and we left. And I don't remember how long it was after that. But y'all know the rest of the story. Buzz obeyed the gospel. And I'm going to tell you, years I've known people, I don't know too many others out there that have changed their lives so drastically as what Buzz has. Because I think Buzz got it. He understands grace. He understands forgiveness. He understands that Christ died for his sins. And he needed to get his life straight. Buzz told me here a while back, he had another episode. He said, Jim, that makes 10 now. I'm past the cat. Well, that's quite amazing in itself. Christ's word can change even those you think they're the hardest or the hard. When a person is broken, that's when they need the rebuilder to talk to them. If you have someone in your family that you need to talk to, don't be scared. The Lord's with you. The Lord is on your side. The Lord will help you go through that as you try to visit with them. Are you going to get turned down? Yeah, there's a good chance you may get turned down. But give up? No. Because I'm standing right here to tell you, I should have gave up and thought about giving up many times on Buzz. But no, kept at it. Number two, Jesus gave Peter a chance to turn three denials into three reaffirmations of love. Peter learned a valuable lesson. Failures don't have to be fatal. Instead, they can be forgiven. We have to be so, so thankful that God sent his only begotten Son to this earth to live, give us the examples and all the teachings, and then to die on that crucial, unforbidden cross. The pain, the agony he went through for us. And we're sinners. We have to be so, so thankful for that. They can be forgiven. The only way they can be forgiven, we have to be a child of God. So if you're not a child of God, look in your soul. Let's get things straight. Then Jesus reissued the call. When breakfast was over, it became apparent there was no second-class kingdom. Citizens, y'all first class. Peter, not Peter with all his mistakes. Not me, not you, not the other apostles at that point. Nobody makes the second mistakes. One more thing. You know, I'm guessing Peter never forgot what he found on that beach that morning. Grace. Jesus Christ gave him grace. Sent him out to fish for more people. Convert as many as he could, and the other apostles. You know, all of us are broken people. Romans 3:23, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. There needs to be a community. where we can confess failures, find forgiveness, receive encouragement, and learn that past failures are not fatal, a place of beginnings again. There is such a place. It is Christ's church with Christ's message, with Jesus Christ as the head of it. Acts 20:24. But I do not consider my life of any account as dear to myself, so that I may finish my course and the ministry which I received from the Lord Jesus to testify solemnly of the gospel of the grace of God. We have such a world that is adrift, and no message is needed more. And we need to be the messengers. We need to be telling others about Jesus Christ. If there is someone who has a broken life, or someone who does need to obey the gospel, now's the time. Don't put it off. Now's the time. If you will, come as we sing.